I thought I was going to be moving it away from the bouncing phone on the front. It rather reminds me of a situation in our car on one occasion, the days when Eileen had a car. Eileen's daughter is a great one for giving us little hints about Jesus without saying she actually has any time for Jesus. And there was a little bouncing Jesus that used to be on the dashboard on a spring. And it used to be a jolly little reminder. I thought that was going to be exactly the same because it's bouncing merrily here. As a bit of a technophobe, you've got no great technical slides or anything this morning. Most of you know me through my involvement with Redeemer now for nearly 2 years. I am a Methodist minister. I had to go through an 18-month candidating period before they even let me into theological college. I felt God's call to ministry during the charismatic revival of the 1970s. Looking round the congregation, there ain't many of you that will remember the 1970s, but there are a few of us. Just a few who remember the 1970s. Part of that process was an interview before all the ministers in the Chester and Stoke-on-Trent district from which I was candidating, a meeting which was held in Holyhead. In those days, Methodism never got its geography very well, and it finished up with us being in Holyhead because that was part of the Chester and Stoke-on-Trent district at the time. Nervously, you know interviews, you've all been through those. Nervously, I faced my questioner, the Reverend Dr. John Davis, all 6'7" of him, and he asked me, just as a sort of throwaway line at the start of the interview, how important is the Old Testament to you, Chris? And I just flipped back, not a lot. There was a stunned silence in the room of about 100 ministers, and you wish the floor had opened up at that precise moment. And so he peeked over his glasses at me and said, what a shame, because I'm an Old Testament scholar. Since then, the Old Testament has become a greater resource for me through Theological College at Queen's in Birmingham and in the 44 years that have gone on since. And so to Proverbs 3, which I have had to rework and revisit quite a bit, as I think some of the rest of us have, who are in fact preaching on this theme. The Lord comes first. I think that's an important thing for us to hold on to. The Lord comes first. A fairy tale often ends with the statement that they lived happily ever after. The wisdom teacher, on the other hand, starts with the happiness of a long life. Listen. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity. These verses repeat the promise which Moses had passed on to all the people of Israel in the name of the Lord. But now these promises have a personal address. Recognize in all of this the nature of the Proverbs, but do not therefore belittle the deep truth that is contained in them. If we acknowledge the Lord to be the first one in our life, if we reckon with him in all aspects of our life, then we will experience how his peace will penetrate everything and will make our life full and rich in all dimensions. Peace, shalom. These words mean much more than the absence of war. The Bible even speaks of the shalom of war, as when David asked Uriah for a report about the success of the military campaign. Shalom, peace, that means welfare and prosperity, order and harmony. Peace is not merely a feeling. It's a particular state of affairs. Wisdom prepares the way towards such a state of shalom. And then the next couple of verses, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and men. Loyalty and faithfulness are essential ingredients of wisdom. Essential agreements. The King James Version calls these qualities mercy and truth. Typical covenant words. The words loyalty and mercy indicate an attitude of solidarity and outlook, as well as in deeds. And with this attitude, we approach others with whom we live in close relation. Our family, our marriage, the church, our work. And these relationships are not governed by our own subjective self as members of a particular group. Mercy and loyalty govern each relationship in which we live and in which we work, expressing true Christian solidarity in an attitude of openness to each other. And we will help and defend the other when necessary. We will assist and support each other, which we do through our missional communities and the local community we reach out to. We will help and defend and correct on occasions. And all of this does not come about in a sudden emotional outburst, but as an expression of continual faithfulness. Faithfulness should be there all the time, without interruption. Loyalty and faithfulness. Faithfulness refers to truthfulness, reliability, and enduring resolve. The writer had been trying to put this across in those early chapters, trying to direct people's thinking. When you think the time that was written, the answer given by the Bible is perfectly clear. The double command of faithfulness points us in the very first place to the Lord. That's the focus. And then to our neighbour. In this way, the Lord Jesus summarised the whole law according to its essence and meaning. And we move through that from the Old Testament to the New, to the understanding of Jesus. And we must do our best to gain a good reputation and to obtain the favour of people and of God. Remember what was said about Jesus as a young boy. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favour with God and man. It can be difficult at times to gain such favour and such a reputation with God and with human beings. Even fellow church members, it can be difficult to do it with, especially church members. I remember when a minister in the West Country, I remember at my very first church council, Methodism loves its committees. And after my arrival, the senior steward, who would be your equivalent of thinking of an elder, came up to me and said, I think I should resign and hand over the reins to younger people. And I said to him, no doubt you've prayed about this, brother, and I accept your resignation. And I just felt the meeting freeze on me. No one said a thing. And at the end of the meeting, someone took me to one side and said he's done that with the previous four ministers and they've all persuaded him that they couldn't possibly do without him. So he stayed on. Sometimes church members as well can be that awkward. I was the only one. The village was called, believe it or not, Madworthy. It does really exist in West Devonshire. Human beings may hinder us in our efforts. Human beings sometimes can get in the way of what God is trying to work through us. And we pick that up from Proverbs. One thing we mustn't do, and this is sadly something that I suppose 40-odd years of ministry has taught me, is avoid people gossiping about families, which can be very hurtful. Instead, we should encourage each other to increase in stature and in fervour with God and humans, and in that order, God and humans. There is much renegade theology which turns everything upside down and disrupts life. Liberal theologians suggest that the second great commandment should become the first and the first should become the second. When you love your neighbour, then you demonstrate that you love God. However, this is without goal and norms for the love of for one's neighbour. Only when we first of all love God and accept all that he says, only then do we know how to treat our neighbour in love. Also, when necessary, by opposing them. Loyalty and faithfulness. Let's make sure that these two are kept together. Hang them, as he said in the reading, hang them as a necklace over your heart. Wear them as a ring, which we will never take off. Drawing things together. And the whole of that passage, the Lord comes first. One of the overall themes in the early part of chapter 3 is the support of our health as well. A necessary condition for a healthy life is a living relationship with the Lord. It will be healing to our flesh and refreshment to our bones. We trust in him and we must know him. We are not talking about knowing in the sense of being aware of things, but in the sense of having experienced things. We're not concerned with knowledge that can be described statistically or stored in a computer, though some of you might like playing with computers. We do not develop a card system of all the qualities of our partner or of a friend. We do not know them on the basis of all the data we've collected about them. What we are talking about here is a warm personal knowledge of the Lord as the first one in our life. Know him who wanted to know us first and through him to Christ. Acknowledge him in all our ways. The AA or the RAC, other organizations are available, is called only in the case of car trouble. Not so within the covenant relation with the Lord. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Do not keep anything from him. Trust him in all things and fully trust ourselves to him. Trust him in all that he says, all that he promises, all that he demands. Let us all walk with the God who came to us in Jesus Christ, who calls himself the way. Be children of our Heavenly Father. Let's oppose the revolutionary world which rejects the Creator of heaven and earth. Those who follow these travel instructions in Proverbs will experience the truth of the promise which comes with them, and he will make straight your paths. This does not guarantee that the journey will be completed without any difficulties. This proverb paints an eastern scene, a path which needs to be straightened and stones which have to be removed. This is not a picture of a paved road with curbs and a smooth road surface. Mind, where do we find one of those in Chorlton? We're reminded of well-worn paths strewn with stones, full of dangers. Ecclesiastes can therefore speak about old people, which I fit into that category now, for whom there are terrors in the way. Straightening such a path means removing rocks, making it passable. That's the promise heard here. Trust in the Lord in all our ways. Then there will be a passable road for us. Then no insurmountable obstacles will force us off the road so that we might lose our way. Knowing him will be like walking along a road. There certainly will be much stumbling, and we will be able to continue the road of our life. It's not a dead-end road. The journey along these dangerous roads will reach its blessed destination to God's praise. And we read just after that passage, and I'm not going to develop this, and we might think that this particular word, honour the Lord with your wealth, that proverb certainly does not apply to us. We're not rich. The proverb speaks of our material goods. That may be much or very little, but no one needs to skip that bit, next bit of the proverb. But another will tackle that in, I think, part three of our Proverbs journey this summer. And God's grace, to me, can be summed up in a slogan of Marks and Spencer's: exclusively available for everyone. God's grace is exclusively available for everyone. Let's be still for a moment before we turn to communion.